Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
To see also. I'm Brady Lancaster.
I'm Kate Jinx. Hey BL.
Hey Jinxie. How are you? It's been a while since we've been on the mic together.
It is, because we were in public together last week, yeah, doing our girlfriend like screenings in Melbourne. Thank you so much if you came. Sorry if you couldn't get a ticket. They sold out pretty fast.
It was so fun.
It was great.
I think I went to the movies 5 times last week.
Oh my God.
But 2 of them were ours, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
I had such a different experience watching Girlfriends with, well, you next to me. We did a lot of like, ooh, every time a good outfit came on.
Yeah.
And yeah, with like, it's so much it's so different with a crowd than it is obviously on my laptop in my bed alone at home.
It is. It's a beautiful community-minded film, isn't yeah. it?
And our campaign to bring it into more people's lives is working. She's working.
She's working.
Mm-hmm. The KPIs are off the charts. How are you?
I am good. By the time this ep comes out, I will be in LA. Mm-hmm. I'll be there for a couple of weeks and yeah, so I'm in that like moment before you go away where it doesn't feel like you're ever going to get on the plane, that kind of feeling of the to-do list just grows and grows and then you have to kind of space it out so it's like day by day, hour by hour kind of to-do list. And then you've got like before you leave the apartment, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that is what is happening in my life.
Do you feel that way every time you go away?
If
depends. Both of you are going this time.
Yes. And yeah, I think it's because, yeah, my girlfriend and I are both leaving at the same time. So that is weird.
Yeah.
But because normally it's just one of us traveling alone or we meet the other one somewhere.
Yeah.
So this is just wild.
What a treat.
Yeah. You know, got to get the place ready for somebody and all that kind of thing.
We'll be potting from different time zones for the next couple of weeks.
I know. It'll be fun. What about you? How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm busy, but
booked and busy. That's how we like her.
Yeah. I've had some time for like some fun, silly stuff lately. Okay. In my new strong girl era, I went to a bodybuilding competition on Saturday.
Okay, wow.
I don't know very much about like the category, the industry of bodybuilding, but there were like several bodybuilding competitions on in Melbourne on the weekend. And
what?
The one that I went to was less than half the price of the other one. It's a fucking expensive to go and sit in an audience, I got to be honest.
How are they not like splitting the crowds?
They might be, but people really are just there to root for their friend. And so I love an underdog.
I know you do.
And so when like a category with like four people would come out and like two would get a massive cheer and then one of them would kind of not get anything from the crowd, I'd just be like wooing. So I was just like every now and then wooing random kind of like silence losers. But I felt so bad because they have shredded to the point of like they're standing up there holding their poses and they're like shaking. Mm. And it's also so freaky to see just like the biggest thighs and arms and chests and like lats and delts that you've ever seen.
Delts?
In real life.
It's a word I've never heard you use before.
I don't even know what it is. I couldn't point it out. But it's competitive bodybuilding. So they're all getting these like insane orange brown spray tans.
Yep.
And
like under fizzy.
Yeah, yes. And under the stage lights, I'm just like, oh my God, it really matters. The tan matters. Because there was a guy who came out who was really hot and he had like Rocky Horror kind of gold undies on for his competition. Because they all have to wear teeny tiny little underpants, different underpants for different categories, I learned. And he was covered in tattoos. He was very handsome, but you know what? Couldn't see the definition. Very hard to judge a man covered in tattoos.
Wow. Yeah. So, okay. So there are a couple of things that tattoos, bodybuilding, no. Japanese baths, no.
No. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And there's this thing that happens after they come out and they do their like double front bicep and they do their side and they all like do their posing in like a very particular way. And then this thing happens called the pose down, which is where all the men on the stage – the women didn't get to do pose downs, I don't think. They also, let's not get into the gender politics of bodybuilding, but like surely if the women wear giant like pleasers to show off their calf definition, the men could too, just saying.
What's a pleaser?
The big lucite stripper heels.
Oh.
Like that's like uniform for female bodybuilders.
Holy shit, right.
But men have to have their feet planted flat on the ground because if they lift a leg it's to kind of like deceive the judge that there's more definition than there is.
Sure. Okay.
But it's like let the cheekers be flat footed.
Yeah, let the cheekers be.
Anyway, there's a lot to get into there, but the pose down happens and that's when like DJ Rockstar or whatever the guy's name is plays like an Eminem banger and the lights start going all crazy and the like purple stage lights come on and it's just the biggest most upside down triangular men you've ever seen just kind of like going through the motions of their like muscle men poses.
Brody is doing the poses.
I'm doing them.
I am seeing Brody doing the poses.
They're like holding their wrists and like twisting to show like their side bicep definition and it's like it's not dancing and it's not choreographed but they have like the same like five moves that they all just keep repeating and then they like walk around the stage doing them to different parts of the audience. It's really good. The guy who won had no one cheering for him and he cried when he thanked his girlfriend for encouraging him to apply. And I was like, he's just so hungry.
Oh, they are so hungry, so thirsty, so hungry.
It's like this bizarre celebration of like fitness and strength, but it's like the opposite of health, which I found very interesting. Like there is no wellness in bodybuilding it's like some of them are like, you know, 10 days out from the comp I was measuring my water intake by this much and then it's after weigh-in then it's water time and then I eat and then it's shred, like it's fucked up.
Water time is so not something a human should ever say.
Okay, maybe I'm calling then it's water time.
Do you think you mentioned a DJ. Do you think there's like a big crossover between like bodybuilding comp DJs and like strip club DJ? Is that the same vibe?
I see why you think that. And there might be a little bit of the Venn diagram in the middle, but the bodybuilding DJ is mostly background noise. Because like as they're coming out and they're being announced and they're just kind of slowly walking around the stage, not very Love Lies Bleeding. It's not as dynamic. But it's just kind of like pulsating background, kind of like, I don't know, the new Taylor Swift album, just like amniotic, ambient, synthy stuff. And then the pose down, it starts getting heckers.
Oh, heckers. Absolutely. Yeah. Have I ever told you that I was once asked to DJ? I just did not really understand what I was being asked to DJ at. And just before the event, pretty much, and I didn't end up going through it, but essentially a play party. I'm using quotation marks. It's an orgy.
Oh.
essentially.
You should have done it.
Yeah. It was the point when I said, oh, I'm not getting paid much. Can I put a friend or two on the door? And they were like, that's not really how it works.
Yeah,
it's not really how it works. And then I kind of looked into it and was like, oh, I should have read the fine print.
I like imagining what kind of like 70s folk girlies you would have played.
Yeah, well, I'm the wrong person.
Like
for
why
that.
They came to you.
I don't know.
I would have loved to see just like the crowd, the vibe that are like big fans of Keijing's DJs.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Really in the mood. My God. It's such a funny idea. I should have done it for the anecdote, but yeah. I just could not bring myself to. This was quite
just
a
lie
long time
and say
ago.
You did it.
This is probably like 13 years ago or something like that. Fun. No one's asked me since.
Well, the word got out in the community.
Well, you were at a bodybuilding gig. I went to see the new play at MTC on Friday night.
You were, I believe, taking a tour of Abbotsford Convent on Saturday when I was there.
Yes. Yeah, I saw the play The Almighty Sometimes by Kendall Fever. What a good name for a writer, right?
Wow.
Kendall Fever.
Yeah.
It was so great. It stars Max McKenna and Nadine Garner, mother-child role. Quick save, but Max is non-binary but is playing Nadine's daughter in the
Got it.
And she is experiencing kind of quite a lot of mental health, very complex mental health issues.
Uh-huh.
And it was a really beautiful play. It was so wonderfully written.
Oh, great.
Yeah, highly recommend.
I haven't been to MTC in friggin' yonks.
They had a football play last time. I missed it. Would have been one for you.
For both of us, such a merging of our interests. I like football. You like theatre. Together we really cover Melbourne. What else have you been up to? What have you been watching?
Well, I've got the new, I'm almost embarrassed to say it, but the new show that I have ripped through is actually quite old. It's like my new Mad Men.
Oh, is this the one that you mentioned to me right before we sat in front of an audience with microphones
yes.
that I was screening last week and I couldn't react?
Yep, that's the one. I just watched the entirety of Dope Sick and it is such an incredible TV show. Has anyone heard of it?
Who's in it? Is Barry Keoghan in it?
No, Michael Keaton's in it. Peter Sarsgaard is in it.
Uh-huh.
Caitlin Deva.
Oh, yeah.
Is in it.
Mm-hmm. Booksmart.
In Booksmart. And Rosario Dawson.
What is it? Because I feel like Dope Sick, everyone's talking about Dope Sick, and I think I thought it was like a documentary about the Sackler family, but it's a series?
It's a series. So it's a mini American miniseries essentially looking at the rise of OxyContin, the way it's sold.
Okay, so I wasn't
No, it's totally
off.
About the Sacklers. Mm-hmm. And so you see the Sacklers like, you know, at dinner, at their board meetings, like coming up with new evil ways to sell the drug and like ways to give it a longer lifespan, and it's so awful. And you also get to see someone within the kind of federal drug, it's not the FDA, but the diversion division, I don't know, looking at how the FDA actually approved the labels that ever went on it. And you see like detectives kind of working on it like for a very long time span, like multi-decade. And you also see it kind of follows the story of Michael Keaton as this small town doctor in Appalachia. Never knew you said Appalachia.
Oh, yeah. Love that.
I thought it was like Appalachia. Appalachia.
There are some girlies who are not trad wives but are on TikTok who are like Appalachian homesteaders.
Oh, I love it.
Love them.
Well,
they're always putting on so many layers of boots and leggings.
Eating their nettle stew or something. Well, yeah, so he is a doctor there, and so it follows kind of his journey of like a doctor who doesn't want to sell it or who doesn't want to prescribe it, and then, you know, his journey with it. Mm. And this girl, a young girl that hurts herself working in the mines, Caitlin Deva, and she's put on it with the promise that it is not addictive. And it's – anyway, it's like – it's so – depressing and evil and maddening. And if you loved the Nan Golden Dog, there's a bit of Nan in there too. Yeah, I would highly recommend it. It's streaming on SBS On Demand for free.
Okay, two questions. When did it come out and how many seasons were there? Like how expired is my like relevance with
actually,
this show?
I don't know when it came out, but Michael Keaton's looking like not young.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely recent-ish.
It's post Guggenheim.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like recent-ish.
It's like the series Fargo where I'm like, how much is there for me to catch up? Because I didn't pay attention and now it seems like I'm too far gone.
I've decided too much with Fargo, but there's a single season of Dope Sick and it's only 8 episodes. You can do it.
Oh, okay. Great.
Get in there. I also watch, Will Poulter is in it.
That's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah. And Will.
Not Barry Keoghan, the other kind the of other like one. Square-faced man.
Well, I was looking at him and you see a lot of him in Dope Sick and I was like, there's something odd about the way he looks, right? Uh-huh. And
he looks like the cartoon mean neighbor in Toy Story.
Well, I think he looks like, yes, I think he looks like he's on an Animorphs book cover and he's not a human and he's not an animal, like he's stuck in the middle. That's kind of how I see Will
There is
Poulter.
Something very vermin-y about his face, for sure.
It's really odd. You can't stop looking at it, though. You're like, when is it going to transition? Like, it's to the full human.
When or is he back going to full Anna?
Yeah, I just don't know. Because I also watched him in another TV series.
The Bear.
Why Didn't They Ask Evans, which is a brand new adaptation of a classic Agatha Christie mystery.
Evans?
Yeah, Why Didn't They Ask Evans?
Is Evans like a
why
butler?
Why didn't they ask Evans?
Why didn't they ask him?
Well, you'll have to watch it to find out.
Governor.
I signed up for bloody BritBox to watch this.
Oh, that's right. You sent me a screenshot of this and I just said that's the most BritBox thing I've ever seen.
I know. But look, it's really...
Why didn't you ask Evans?
Why didn't they ask Evans? It's really cute. I really liked it. It's like only 4 or 5 episodes and directed by Hugh Laurie. Thank you very much.
Oh my goodness. God.
Do you know who directed Dope Sick?
No. Imagine if I did.
I know, I would love that. Who created, wrote and directed it? Jonathan from Buffy. Did you watch Buffy?
Yeah.
He's like one of the minions. He's like, I'm not a minion. He's a minion. Yeah, he is,
Is this like how Kirk from Gilmore Girls is like big time Marvel director now? Sean Gunn?
Is he?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Sean and James Gunn are like Guardians of the Galaxy brothers.
I think I saw him once in LA. Maybe Emily did. I think it was my memory.
You never know.
I'd never know.
They merge.
But yeah, I was quite excited that little tiny Jonathan from Buffy is behind Dope Sick.
I've been watching the Jared Carmichael reality show. Have you kept up?
I know what it is, but I have not seen.
Oh, okay. Because we went to Zoe's show a couple weeks ago and then we went out to dinner afterwards. And at the start of the night, I had never heard of Jared Carmichael's reality show. And by the time I woke up the next day, I feel like it was like the talk of the town. And so I've been watching it each week and I'm – okay, you have to watch and then we'll discuss because I don't really want to discuss until you've watched it.
Can you just give me – I was at that dinner, but – uh-huh. Can you just tell me who Jared Carmichael is again?
So he's a comedian. He had a show years ago in the States called The Carmichael Show. He did a lot of stand-up. He would do stand-up shows where he'd be like, I really want a girlfriend. I really want to, you know, I see people going out on paddle boats. Like they showed a clip of this in a recent episode of the show. He's like, but that's not something you can do with your guy friends. He says a different word for his male friends. Mm-hmm. But like, that's something you can only do if you have a girlfriend. Then he's like hitting on a woman in the audience and it's recorded. And then he had this special called Rathaniel a few years ago where it was essentially his public coming out. And talking about like how his relationship with his parents had kind of fractured in the wake of him coming out. So he's made this reality show that kind of frames him as, well, not frames him, it depicts him as he is, which is very successful off the back of this special. It's on Binge in Australia, I think. And essentially, like where it picks up at the start, he's like having a lot of sex with Grindr hookups who are coming over in the filming of the show. Although you realize one of them is Bo Burnham, but he's kind of playing a role as like a guy coming over to hook up with him and telling him that it's fucked up, that he's got cameras everywhere and it's not real and this and that. And then by the end of the episode, Jared takes him as his date to the Emmys or Golden Globes or whatever, where he wins. And it's interspersed with him doing quote unquote stand-up shows where he's kind of like narrating the show that's going on. But I've got to be honest, if they're real stand-up shows, they're the worst comedy specials anyone's ever made. Because he just says things like, I haven't talked to my mom since the special came out, but she told me she's proud of me. And then he just puts his head in his hand at the end of every line he delivers. And it's at the point now where I've watched 4 episodes of this and I'm like, I can't watch this man put his head in his hands one more time. Because I'm also at the point now where I believe that the show is like a big kind of Nathan Fielder type, like creative experiment on the idea of a reality show and what it allows the person in front of the camera to be able to get away with and what it allows them to say, quote unquote, honestly. But I think there is quite a lot of like story and performance going into it. I'm curious to hear what you think when you've watched it.
Do you think
it.
It's like too meta for its own good? Or
I think it's a bit too meta for its own good, but I also don't believe that, well, I have trouble grappling with the idea that he, so for example, in episode 3, his best friend, who you've seen in Grabs in the first 2 episodes, moves to New York, wants to become an actor. He puts her up in his apartment and just kind of like is shitty about her being there and is kind of like sick of her and is not giving her like time to figure her stuff out. And for her birthday, blindfolds her, acts like he's taking her somewhere nice, but puts her in like a kind of serviced apartment and then says like to his boyfriend or an audience or something like, I didn't tell her it's just for a month. I've only rented this place for a month. She's acting like God has blessed her with this friend who would do such a beautiful thing for her to rent her own apartment. The episode just kind of ends with her like putting a spice rack together and like moving into this place. And I'm like, either what we're seeing is false or it's scripted or this man is like a truly cruel kind of like nasty person who is using, yeah, his new money and fame to like kind of just make the people in his life do like bend to his whims a little.
Okay. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
Is he in Poor Things?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Right.
He's the guy who's like with the woman on the ship who like teaches her about, I don't know, books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's
cool.
Him. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
He also made that movie. He directed that movie that I didn't like at MIFF a couple years ago called like Count to Ten. It had Charlie from Girls in it.
I think it was Count to Three.
Was it?
Maybe.
Yeah, Close Your Eyes and Count to Three or something
like that. Yeah, I saw that.
It was about like Charlie from Girls was like a very suicidal friend and it was like the last day that these two friends, he like broke him out of the hospital and
he makes some choices.
Yeah.
Nancy from Girls.
Yeah, so does Jared Carmichael, turns out. Well, he directed that movie and I just came out of it being like, not for me.
All right.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah.
Meh.
Little PSA, if when you're listening to this and you're in Sydney or Melbourne or online, there's a little cover story in The Good Weekend
that it's I wrote. It's out.
Yeah, it's out.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, I profiled Our and Gowrie Rice.
Our and Gowrie.
And we learned the trick in her Instagram bio of how to pronounce her name. It rhymes with flower in dowry. I think of it every time I say her name.
I think of it every time too.
Every single time. And Gowrie Rice, well, you don't want to say it wrong
to
her face.
No.
Interviewed her at Your Fave and Mine Napier Quarter.
Oh, love.
A little while ago. And so this is the, when I was speaking cryptically a few podcasts ago about like, I'm just watching a bunch of stuff related to a story I can't talk about yet. Rewatch Mare of Easttown. The new Mean Girls movie. The Beguiled.
Oh, yeah.
This teen comedy I'd never even heard of and really enjoyed and texted you saying, if you're with your niece and nephew, called Honor Society, which I thought was really good.
It's the Stranger Things guy?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Real twisty, turny little teen kind of like dark election-y.
Okay, cool.
Election adjacent modern.
Cool, cool.
Yeah. So I talked to Anne Gowrie Rice on the cover of The Good Weekend. Big boy story. Also talked to Bruce Beresford. Ever heard of him?
Oh, la la.
Yeah.
Getting a little, some color.
a little color, a little background. It was a lot of color. He answered the phone when I think was outside in like a field. But it's all right. We made it work.
Love that for Bruce.
Yeah.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome. Like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, a film that is in cinemas that I don't know whether we're endorsing, but I'm thinking we should talk about it at the beginning of the episode because it's a biopic, so there are no spoilers.
You know how it's ending.
We know what happened to Amy Winehouse.
Yes. Sadly, we know what happened.
Yes. Oh, God, where to start?
So Sam Taylor-Johnson's made a biopic of Amy Winehouse. Would we say too soon? Some people are saying too soon. I think it's not too soon if it's good.
I think it's not too soon if it's good, and this is not.
Yeah, the documentary wasn't too soon, and that was almost a decade ago.
The documentary is fantastic. It's brilliant. People should actually just watch that documentary. It came in 2015 by Asif Kapadia. See that.
Imagine if this is the end of the segment. We just end it there.
Click.
We've already recommended something else to watch instead of Back to Black.
I think you should say no, no, no to this film, Bea.
Whoa. Yeah, I agree, Jinxie. I fucking agree. The little girl from Camden Town.
I felt like they were doing the way we do British accents in this movie.
Literally same. And I'm just going to say it. A lot of the reviews of this movie are in agreement with us that it's not a good movie. It's kind of like a pretty flat, false depiction of Amy Winehouse's life and career and struggles and relationships and artistic kind of merits. But they do praise the central performance by Marissa Abella, which I felt was caricature, like impersonation bordering on offensive. I've got to be honest.
Mm.
The straw plasticky wigs, which are not her fault, but the like, there's kind of like a gurning quality to her. Like,
you're doing it now. I can see you doing it.
The way the bottom jaw like twists around as she's trying to kind of
like that.
Get her mouth around what Amy sounded like when she sang. I found it really troubling to watch.
I found it troubling too. And I think a lot of the reviews are like, she's one to watch. What an amazing job she did because
don't
she sang the songs.
Don't let this bad movie like dim her shine.
Totally.
Kind of thing.
And I think like, this was maybe an impossible task for her, and she's probably great, actually.
Yeah.
And she was really giving it all. And you absolutely need to blame the direction and not just the performance, because there's a reason why she gave that performance.
Yeah.
And she did sing all the songs, which I kind of didn't really realize when I watched the film and was chatting to a friend afterwards. And looking back, it's like, yeah, they were fine. That it's kind of like good enough to just pass. But it's, there was like zero, I'm not the biggest Amy Winehouse fan. Mm. Like I think her life was, she was incredibly talented and, you know, it's the, her story is so tragic. But she was like, especially if you watch the documentary, it's like she had so much spark, like, so much charisma. Like she was charisma.
Oh, she was so funny.
So funny. There was so much like fizziness, so much energy. And none of that is in this film. It's completely, like you said, flat. Like it's a totally flat portrayal of an incredibly talented, funny, you know, fucked up person.
Yeah. I think a lot is made of, like I've heard a couple of reviews and critics say something similar to this, which is that for all her talent and skill as a songwriter, you know, like Mark Ronson, the way that he remembers her in that documentary and also in interviews, like there's a great one he did on Howard Stern talking about working with Amy. Like by all accounts, she was kind of a marvel at songwriting and the act of like taking these experiences that we kind of see depicted in the film and turning them into music. But the way it's shown to us in the film is that the songs just kind of just happen to her.
Yeah, like totally.
Things happen in her life and then she sings a bit.
Yeah, she did not work for it. And it's like, yeah. I think she worked so fucking hard on all of those songs.
Yes.
And she was pretty naturally talented. Like she did have this kind of incredible gift, but there was real hard work there and yeah. she took pleasure in the work, and that's just not shown at all yeah. in this film.
Yeah. And there's also like a,
she's like, oh no, he left me, I'll write a song about it.
Yeah. Or that girl came in and fucked Blake and I'm wanting him, so I'm gonna sing a song about she's fucked.
Yeah, that was it. That's the film.
That's the film. But heaps of that.
So much of it.
There's also quite a lot of exposition about setting up what she's not. I'm not going to be one of your little Spice Girls. I love Lauryn Hill, you know. I love the Fugees. I'm Lauryn Hill. I'm not a fucking Spice Girl. I'm not Katie Mel, you are. And like just saying, as an Amy fan, as I am, Katie Mel, you are, who represents like something quite like exceptional in the Amy oeuvre of her comedy performance. She was on Nevermind the Buzzcocks once yeah. and it was a legendary performance where she had to like, you know, I think she had to pick Jamila from that song Superstar. I don't know what it is. Yeah. Out of a lineup. And she like started getting really sad. Like Amy was like, felt like the show was making fun of the people on this lineup, that they were, you know, basically anonymous musicians who had gone nowhere. And she was getting really emotional and like kind of chastising people for making fun of them. But then she also, Simon, what's his face, Amstel, who hosted that show, at one point, Amy just wants to go backstage and have a drink. And he's like, you can't, Amy, you can't. And he's teasing her, he's ribbing her, they're old friends. But she's clearly like not in her best state at this point. But at one point he says to her like, what about her, Katie Mel, you are? Would you ever want to do a duet with her? And Amy just slumped down in her chair, goes, I'd rather have cat AIDS, thank you. She's so funny. But there's a lot of like, I'm not that, I'm this other thing. And like the first time she and Blake have sex and he's doing coke in her bedroom, and then she's like, class A drugs are for mugs. I'm not rock and roll, I'm jazz.
I'm jazz.
I'm not rock and roll. I'm Amy. I'm jazz. That's a ciggy. But there is a lot of there's a lot of accent work. I'm so sorry. But our favorite queen of the accent, isn't it? Mrs. Arris.
Mrs. Arris, Leslie Manville. And I knew what happened to her character in real life. And I was like, that should happen soon so that she can leave the set of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a shame. Yeah, I can't tell anyone to there's no reason.
No.
And the fact that it was made with kind of like the blessings of the family is just, you should run screaming.
You can tell too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her mum is nowhere to be seen in the film, but her dad is there and he is just a positive, encouraging, really nice, supportive presence in her. Always there to protect Amy.
When she finally says she wants to go to rehab, he just says, let's go.
Hop in me cab.
You're like,
he's certainly never, you know, taking the paparazzi to follow her while she's on vacation, yeah, like he did in the documentary.
Curious.
No. Yeah, really weird.
And Blake actually quite a romantic.
Blake actually, when she first did heroin, he was nowhere to be seen. She chose that for herself. And then he got clean and he just couldn't be around her bad influence anymore. No, 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 Amy. Don't want a bar of it. I'm a nice man.
Yeah.
However you got that broken tooth in your mouth, I'm not sure. I'm Blake. I'm a nice guy.
I did love a few things about it. I did love one thing.
I have two things I liked.
Okay. I liked to see – mine are related. I liked to see the really wide white belts that she was wearing.
Yeah.
You know, that I was like, oh, this is so like makeup club. This is so make out club rather, like so indie sleaze. And I loved a close up of a ballet slipper, really roughed up ballet slipper in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Cinderella moment perhaps. Mm. But I was like, oh yeah, that ballet slipper, I know it.
Yes.
I know
it.
That's about it.
The grubby black ballet slippers is one of the things I liked about it too. That and the like gunk caught under her nails. And you're right, like the set design, it wasn't trying to be some chic version of that era. Like the little townhouse she lived in Camden looked exactly like it would if a girl who got a little bit of money in the early 2000s got to decorate a townhouse.
Yeah.
And the other thing I really liked was being in a cinema with like my friend Sinead sitting behind me, you sitting in front of me, Georgia sitting next to me, as Blake first comes in and meets Amy in the pub and asks what she's drinking.
Mm.
You forgot, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I think, what does she say? It's like Kahlua, Bailey's and banana liqueur.
Something like that, yeah.
It definitely ends. It's like three spirits and then banana liqueur.
Oh.
And she's loving it.
Yeah, we forgot to – maybe we need to incorporate that into a live show.
I definitely want to try one.
I don't think anyone would still be standing if that's what we served.
It looks horrendous. And then he orders her another one. She's so into him.
Oh, my God. And then the Shangri-La's moment, which was – that was cute. Okay. It was cute. It was funny.
It was cute. He was great. Jack O'Connell, who plays Blake.
He was really good.
He's so charming. Like, I'd fucking – burn it all down for Jack O'Connell too if he was doing that to me. But like the idea that he like introduced her to like the 60s girl group sound that like defined her career, I was like, this feels like revisionist history, but all right. Blake,
yeah, sure, let's
Blake
go
seemed
with
great. What mm-hmm. a muse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to Black No.
Back to Black No. Watch the documentary instead.
Yeah.
Just listen to Back to Black.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's about it.
Yeah.
Done.
The next movie we're going to talk about, however, also in cinemas now, is one that Jinxie and I feel very differently about. We're going to talk about it pretty briefly and then go into a little spoiler warning. So check the show notes if you haven't yet been to see Alex Garland's Civil War, because you might want to skip ahead to avoid any – really encourage you to go see it before listening to this bit.
Yeah, totally encourage you to see this. You've got time now that you have cleared your schedule of Back to Black. So spoiler noise and then we'll get into it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank God they're gone. I just need to say that I saw this in IMAX and I feel like that was maybe a mistake for me.
It was so much.
Like a full-bodied kind of meltdown in this film.
I don't doubt the sound alone in an IMAX cinema. Like it was bad enough in – not bad enough. It was impactful enough at the Nova.
Yeah, it was really a lot in IMAX.
It's
so
a whole lot of movie.
It's a lot. And I was like right in the middle of an aisle, of course, because that's where the good seats are up the back.
Obviously.
And then I felt really like, oh, I'm trapped.
Yeah.
Anyway. But a lot of other people I was there with were like, that was perfect for it. So I think maybe I'm just getting soft in my old age. I don't know.
That too.
But Civil War, let's talk. BL, you really liked it.
I really loved this movie. I mean, I'm a fan of Alex Garland stuff that I have seen, which is not everything. I really liked Men a couple of years ago. I think a lot of the criticisms of Men were, I mean, fair enough, people have different opinions than I do, but I think a lot of the takes were kind of in bad faith. The idea of like, oh, thanks a lot, man, for telling us this movie telling us misogyny is bad in this movie.
I didn't see it. I haven't seen it.
That's okay.
I really liked it. What's her face?
Well, she's up against it, so maybe you'll like to see that. I don't know. I loved Ex Machina. I think I haven't seen Annihilation, and you know I'm in my Leo era, so I tried to watch The Beach recently, which I found fucking unwatchable and turned it off halfway through.
Oh, really? What?
Yeah.
I rewatched it recently in Thailand.
All right. Well, that's maybe different, but I just thought it was...
Did you get to the beach?
Yeah, because they get to the beach so quickly.
Oh, they do get to the beach.
It's like
quickly.
They meet and then swim and then they're at Tilda Swinton's like little cult.
I can't believe have you turned that off? That's and there's so like funny.
A monkey guard. There's a guard monkey who doesn't catch them.
Of course there's a guard monkey.
Yeah, there just wasn't enough like Leo fucking with All Saints playing in the background for me.
I mean, that could have been the second half. You don't know.
I fast forwarded to try to find it. But all that is to say, the stuff of Alex Garland's that I have seen, for the most part, I've really liked. And I think his movies are questions. I don't think they give answers. And I think that is what a lot of people seem to struggle with about those three in particular, like Annihilation, Men, and Civil War.
Yeah, like the first exhibition that Bette Porter curated in L Word.
Yeah.
His works are provocations.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. His works are sure are provocations. Okay, so Civil War, if you're listening to this, you've already seen it, but it's
essentially... Oh, you don't care about spoilers.
Oh, you don't care about spoilers. It's like a road movie. Kiki Dunst plays Lee Smith. A lot of reviews are calling her Lee Miller. That is not her character's name.
No, she was just named after Lee
That's
Miller.
A different war photographer who I'm so glad you explained who Lee Miller was to me on the podcast like 2 weeks before I saw this movie.
Well, because her name is Lee in the film and I was like, oh, yeah, there we go. She was named for Lee Miller. And then
they invoke her really quickly.
And then like a second later, someone's like, oh, are you named after Lee Miller?
You know, the war photographer, the documentary war photographer.
Yeah.
I did think of her also as they're, you know, entering we're behind the spoiler wall. When they're going into the White House at the end of the film, I was like, oh my God, they're going to do the Lee Miller. They're going to take the photo, the self-portrait in the place where a dictator was just killed.
Yeah, someone's getting into Nick Offerman's bathtub.
I was waiting for it. I was kind of waiting for it because also Jesse...
and it's not Megan Mullally.
Kaylee Spaney, who plays Jesse, the like young kind of mentee photographer, I love that she takes... Like, I want to buy a book of her photos from this war. She takes the black and white, like she's shooting on film, whereas Kiki Dunst is shooting on, you know,
digital color,
which I was like, oh, I love the, I don't know. There's just something about setting a war film with the journalists that I found like riveting.
Yeah, same. And I think it's like that, like it's in the near, not too distant future. It's like in this ambiguous time and we don't really know anything about what the war is. We know a few things that some unlikely states have, you know, become allied and the whole government system seems to be completely breaking down. And yet there are some factions of the United States where people are still kind of living normal lives or going about their normal lives. And then we've got, you know, these war photographers and journalists kind of along for the ride. And I really like the way they all spoke about their jobs and why they were doing their jobs, particularly Kirsten Dunst. Like, she's really hard on Kaylee Spaney's character. I cannot remember her name at the moment.
Jessie.
And she's like, she's really hard on her. And I kind of appreciated that because she's really like... You need to be up for this or you need to get the hell out because you will die. Mm. And she talks about how they are not – what am I trying to say?
They're supposed to be objective.
Yeah, they're supposed to be objective, that it's essentially they're not there to solve anything. They're there to archive what is happening. Yeah.
And I think that also brings up like something that has always been at the core of like the moral of like a documentary photographer, you know, the idea of like taking a photo of a starving child rather than giving it food.
Absolutely.
Taking a photo of people bleeding out in a war zone rather than trying to stop the bleeding.
Yeah. And so you're documenting, but you're also aestheticizing this like tragedy that is unfurling before your very eyes. Mm. But if they were to stop and help one person, then that's where their story would finish and they wouldn't actually get to document anything else. Mm. But I really liked that kind of push and pull between the like younger, older, like, you know, photographers. But also, yeah, that you mentioned that Kiki Dunst is shooting digital, she's shooting color, and little Jessie is doing black and white on an SLR and she's actually having to, you know, process the rolls on the go.
Yeah.
But like that, I was watching and I was like, it's like such a cool generational thing of that kind of younger generation going like, no, actually, like analog is where it's at. Mm. And Kiki is like, no, bitch, I've got to get this done fast. Done.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
I think it also, that idea of
paraphrasing
like,
on that, no, bitch, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could hear her deliver that line though. I think that something that I just thought of the entire way through and since seeing it is just that idea of like the myth of the objective observer, you know, and especially in a film like this where it's made clear very early on that they're going to Washington to shoot and interview the president, we learn a little bits and pieces in his third term. There was something called the Antifa massacre that Kirsten Dunst's character got kind of famous for shooting. We don't know whether Antifa were massacred or did the massacring. Like there are all these questions. But we learn that within this government, within Washington, journalists are like shot on sight. No, they don't want anyone kind of like sharing the news of what they're doing or what's happening in this war. And so the film holds our hand. I think the film leads us to certain conclusions, which based on some criticisms of the film weren't clear enough or like laid out strictly and like neat enough little boxes or black and white, despite the fact that we see like, you know, militia groups basically inferring if you're with the Western factions of LA and Texas, you'll be like put into a mass grave.
Yeah. And if you weren't born in America, anywhere in America, then you will be killed.
Yes.
So extremely xenophobic rule is happening over there and like incredible lawlessness.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the idea that this is sort of an apolitical film and Alex Garland has been very like, not tight-lipped, but he will not say anything too much about it. And so many criticisms of it lie in the fact that it's
quote unquote apolitical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was this one interview in Variety with Kirsten Dunst, where the journalist is kind of pushing her on it. And he says, so do you believe that it's not political? And she says, do you believe that it's not political? I mean, it's an anti-war film. And like that is actually what it is. And she said, this movie, after you see it, you want to talk about it for a while with people. And I think that any movie does that is incredible, which is a nice little softballing there from Kirsten Dunst. But
she's a pro.
She is a fucking pro. I love the reconnaissance, not that she ever really went away, but I love all the interviews coming out where she's really speaking her mind.
Well, I like watching her face in this movie, this face that I've grown up with, and I just had this moment of like, God, what a treat it is to watch her age and watch her like step into roles like this where she is the mentor of the new Sofia Coppola, you know, heroine.
I know how I never realized until I started reading the, like all of the interviews, that she was the one who suggested Kaylee for Priscilla.
And she got the news on the last day of shooting Civil War that she got cast as Priscilla.
Amazing.
And like Kirsten started crying, like celebrating her.
Yeah, and they've become really close. And if you can read any of the interviews that they do together, they're really sweet, total sister vibes there.
But yeah, Kirsten Dunst, the roles she's been doing, the press she's been doing for this film especially, is such a fucking gift. Like she's talking about how she and Jesse Plemons connected over all these things they have in common, but she was also like, we hate the same stuff, and that's really good.
Can relate.
And
I was like,
love that. But also she's been saying that, you know, after Power of the Dog, she was getting all these offers, but they were all like mom roles.
Yeah.
And she's like, so I just turned them all down. I just waited for something really good.
Love her.
Her mom role in Power of the Dog was exceptional. Loved that movie. Yeah.
I also did love her speaking out about so many actresses playing with their faces and not aging in a particularly authentic way.
Mm.
Not to say that that is I'm not passing any judgment on that, but
you can't tell the judgment in my face because I'm so frozen.
No, but that thing of like, actors doing it, and so we never actually get to see someone who looks authentically 70 anymore,
or an authentic eyebrow.
Yeah,
for example, that was another thing in Back to Black I had issues with, was the modern eyebrows. But anyway,
yeah, actually there was a character in Dope Sick, there's a woman who comes on it, and I was like, oh my god, thank god this character actress still exists. But yeah, I do love that Kirsten Dunst has reached this point in her career where she can truly speak her mind. Yeah. And she's still getting so many good roles.
It must have been Power of the Dog, but a few years ago she did one of those Hollywood Reporter roundtables. Do you remember that clip? And it was all these actresses. It was like, I think it was like, or maybe it was when she did that show, How to Be a God in Central Florida, or Fargo. I don't know. But it was, I think it was a TV actors roundtable. And I think it was like Viola Davis, maybe Juliana Margulies, like quite, you know, an actors round table, a bunch of them, but they were all talking about, like, you know, you're always working with male directors and male directors do this, and we need more female directors. We need more female directors. And Kirsten Dunst just kind of goes, well, I don't know. I work with heaps of female directors.
That's right. Do you remember that?
She essentially kind of said, like, she was saying, like, I've worked with Sofia Coppola. I've worked with Leslie Headland, like this person, this person. She's like, I think it's up to us to choose to do roles by female directors. And she doesn't say it in as many words, but I think a lot of them were like, but the opportunities that they get. And I think what she kind of infers is like, no, but you bring your star power to those roles. Like, you've got to fucking invest in these people too.
Yeah.
For other people, you bring a certain cachet.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Kiki,
she's,
we love.
So good.
We love.
Wagner Moura in this film, also very hot.
Pedro Pascal light.
Yeah. Sleazier, which we need.
I did enjoy that his character starts to really get off on all of the war. That he sees all this kind of violence and he becomes like kind of an adrenaline junkie or something like that. Like, it's not objective for him, really. No.
Whereas she's like deeply traumatized and anxious the further the film goes, the closer they get to Washington.
Yeah, and she starts to realize the implications of her work. And yeah, I thought that her character arc was fantastic.
So good.
There are a few things in there. Like, it wasn't like a home run for me, the film. I really wanted to know more about where their photos were going. I spent most of the film going, but how are they sending them? We've already learned that they can't upload.
We know that Sammy works at the New York Times, but do we just infer that they're freelance?
Yeah, how's it? And then they work for Reuters.
Reuters, that's right.
But like, who is left? Like, if the major cities have crumbled, then where? I just wish that there had been a single line in there that I could have turned it off in my head. And then I'd be like, okay.
Yeah,
because I was fine to have like the fully kind of ambiguous unfolding of why this civil unrest had happened in the first place, and not really knowing anything about the president aside from the fact that he's a fascist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that he's like this fascistic person in charge. I'm like, okay, I can deal with that. That's enough information for me. But there were just those tiny little things. I was like, I want to know.
It's like we needed, when they go into that sleepy little town that's still kind of like shielded and like protected and acting as if everything's fine. It's like they just needed to walk past like a trash can full of the paper with one of the photos we've seen them take on it or something.
Something,
you know?
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I was like, where is it? Because no one had like a iPhone as such.
Yeah.
Right? So, yes. I mean, because it wouldn't work. But
it was, I mean, I think this is probably a reaction a lot of people, most people watching this are having, but it's especially tough going from sitting on our phones every day, watching photos of civilians and journalists being killed in Gaza, to then watching a film like this where the helmet and the vest that says press and the car that says press is an implicit like protection.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist in Gaza, that's for sure.
Yeah. And so it's already feels like it's kind of from another time, this film, when like the act of documenting a war and being with like the Fourth Estate was some kind of shield.
Yeah, I think that's what sort of surprised me about my reaction to, like, my skin crawling in the cinema was that I see so many, like, violent films as my job, right? Mm. Like, I see everything and you become a little immune to it. And then, of course, we are just being completely flooded with images, mostly taken by civilians, also not even by the press, in Gaza, and seeing that war unfolding and just how incredibly violent it is and so much death. And it becomes like it's all you can see.
Yeah.
And it did make me think a lot about what is happening. I mean, everything makes me think about it, but, you know, I was thinking a lot about what is happening and who is controlling the images that we see and where the images go, and that we're lucky to be seeing those images because, as we know in previous wars, you know, you don't get to see everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did want to say, though, a really great thing in the film, and there's so many good things in the film, but I loved the music in this film. I loved that it opens with a Silver Apples song. It's like from 1968, the song Love Fingers. And it is a song that it's like not a war zone song. Like it's so abrasive and incredible. It's like one of my favorite songs, but it's...
Would you play it at a sex party? Is it a war zone song?
We'll never know. We'll never know.
Play party.
We'll never know. That's a Spotify playlist I have not made. But I really like that it changed like the tone or what you go in thinking is going to be the tone of the film. It made the whole thing quite ambiguous. You didn't know when it is or who anyone is or I don't know. It just kind of got under your skin. I really loved that. And I liked when it also – there's like two Silver Apple songs in there. There's – oh, no, there's one Silver Apple song, two suicide songs, very cool, including Dream Baby Dream, love that, and the De La Soul song, which is such a powerful moment in the film of, like, what is happening on screen as that De La Soul song plays. Oh, yeah, loved it.
Love. Great movie.
Great movie.
I'm going to go see it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see it again too.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommends?
I mentioned them at the top, kind of Men I want to watch again. Note to self, watch Annihilation.
Sounded like you were just recommending Men, BL.
Give him a go. You never know.
I have, it didn't work.
Power of the Dog, also. Great movie.
Yeah, cool.
Love Jesse Plemons. We didn't talk about him in this chat because too upsetting.
Those glasses.
So hot.
Oh, my God. I loved his little glasses.
I find him so sexy.
Well, so does Kiki Dunst.
Yeah, we're the same.
Yeah, cool. I only have one, and it is a podcast that I have mentioned before, the New Yorker Critics at Large episode, which came out maybe a week ago or so.
So good.
Is completely devoted to this, and you get to hear from three different journalists kind of dissecting the film and what it means, and I thought it was their best episode in a very long time. Mm. It's incredible. If you've seen the film, absolutely listen to it.
All right, it's time for Also Also's. I feel like it's been ages since we've recommended anything.
Yeah, it has. Although, like every episode, we're recommending things, including like not to see films.
Yeah, that's true. An anti-rec. What's your first one this week?
My first one, this is funny for an anti-rec. It's something that you also enjoy, BL, but it is a newish newsletter, free newsletter called Hate Read.
Yeah.
It's anonymous essays collected by the writer Delia Kai, who does a Substack, whatever it is, called D's Links. And she's really funny and great. And she writes for Vanity Fair, etc. And I really like her pieces, but oh boy, these hate reads are delicious. So essentially, she's taking people are writing in, I don't know, maybe they're her friends, maybe they're all her, we don't know because they're anonymous, and they are writing about something that actually they really dislike. And I just find it, yeah, delicious.
It's like, important.
Yeah, like topics such as oodles was one of the latest ones.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm a person with a poodle, so I'm still reading. He's not an oodle, he's a pure poodle anyway. Boy Genius, can't agree. Berlin, astrology, Barbie, there are hate reads on all of these things. And They're fun.
The Boy Genius one, which came out on Monday or Tuesday this week, was, I felt so seen.
Yeah.
I really did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, and one was just like someone hating menswear in general. I just find it so funny, especially because we all, you know, like people are so nervous about what they're saying online. Mm-hmm. And
the fact that people are getting so fired up about these newsletters also is kind of testament to the fact that everyone's little pussy babies and needs to just have a better sense of humor.
Totally. And I don't mean like people are worried about what they're writing online in like a cancelled way. I mean, it's kind of like this influency way of like, you don't want to say the wrong thing and then piss off that person or whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, but these people are going for it and it just gives me life.
It's so good. My first one is, it's what I was watching on TV when you came over tonight. It's the Steve! Documentary on Apple TV. It's two feature-length episodes, essentially, two 90-minute episodes called Then and Now, all about the life and career of Steve Martin. If you have read or listened to his memoir, Born Standing Up, everything in the first episode will be kind of familiar to you. Like I listened to that audiobook over 10 years ago and I was still like, oh yeah, I remember this now. The bit where he walks out of the theater and everyone follows him. But it ends with him essentially stepping away from stand-up in 1980 and he never does his set again. And he's essentially the most famous comic in the world. He's the biggest stand-up comedian who has ever done perform stand-up and he's done. He had this concept for his show. The concept was, what if I made fun of the nature of stand-up? And then everyone got it and so it stopped being fun and interesting for him. So he just stopped. And he's wearing the white suit, which legend has it Eve Babbitt's told him to wear. That's not in the documentary. That's just in her forward to LA Girls, LA Woman. But yeah, I'm up to the second episode now and I'm having so much fun, Kate, watching he and Martin Short. They're just like talking about his life and career. It's all the paintings, like Steve Martin as art collector, which I just love. But in between, it's like him and Martin Short writing material for their stand-up show and just trying to make each other laugh. And there's a bit where they're just biking around LA and Steve's pointing out like things that he likes and a place where a horse liked him once. And he's like... Martin says like, why don't I interview you for the documentary while we're driving? And Steve's like, well, we're biking, but okay. And then Martin Short just takes a beat and goes, so like, what made you want to like do stand up? And it's so good. It's so good.
I can't wait to see it.
Steve talks about making his garage just a room to look at paintings in because he just wants to take a few paintings into his space and just look at them because he has so many.
Good on him.
And they're all about loneliness. Oh, I love it. I love it so much. It's on Apple TV and it's made by Morgan Neville, who I had to Google why his name is familiar. And then he made 20 Feet from Stardom, Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers documentary.
Oh, I loved that.
And Roadrunner, the Anthony Bourdain documentary from a few years ago. Oh, yeah,
great. Great, yeah. great.
So good.
I'll watch out for the deep fakes in this one then. Remember the whole deep fake thing? Oh, yeah. Anyway, that's another segment entirely. I did love that doc. Okay, my next one is a shampoo.
Oh,
I've never done a shampoo before. It's an also, but it's a 3-in-1 BL.
Sorry.
I know, right? It's called Clean and Finish by a company called Robe, which is founded by an Australian hairstylist named Lauren McKellar, who has been like, working with hair for decades.
Sure.
Anyway, she has this whole new range. They're in nice bottles. Currently, you cannot buy it in stores. You can only buy it online.
Is it one of those like co-wash products?
What's that?
Where it's like encourages you to not wash your hair as often or does not strip it of
stuff. Yeah, it doesn't strip it of its natural. Sure. Whatever.
Big naturals.
Exactly. God knows I've got – no, I don't. But I used to use New Wash by Hair Story, that American company that did that, and I loved it so much. But I started getting really skeeved out by the fact that I was buying shampoo that was being shipped from America. I found that I couldn't do it anymore.
Got it.
This is all local, so I'll support it. And – yeah, you don't use shampoo and conditioner and anything else. You just use this one product. It doesn't foam, so people find it weird at first. Mm. You just have to really massage it in. And it's really great. If you have like, I don't know, if, apparently it's good for curly hair. I have dead flat straight hair. And it's really good if you are not into products or not into, like I never really use a blow dryer or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of it's like it gives you a natural look.
This feels like a perfect moment to bring up something that I think about all the time, which is that I once saw you tweet that you go through your shampoo at like a double rate to conditioner. I guess this is before you used Hair Story. And I was always like, what the fuck?
Doesn't everybody?
I don't.
Are you for real?
I buy like two Olaplex conditioners for every shampoo.
Oh.
Because I just use a little bit of the shampoo and it gets so foamy that I feel like I'm using hair. And then conditioner, I want to be like treating my hair.
Oh, I only ever would ever only put it on the very ends of my hair conditioner. That's it.
This was many years ago.
Never go to my scalp.
I literally ran out of my conditioner the other day being like, I should have fucking bought a second one. And I thought of you. And we've never like, talked about this.
Jinx has some. She's got heaps of conditioner left
over. She's got fucking heaps. We should try it. We should wash each other's hair. Anyway, just it felt like a moment to bring it up.
Mm.
This has solved
I'm shocked.
A lot of problems, I'm sure.
Yeah.
My next recommendation is also a product to use in the shower. It's a cleanser. It's by the Korean skincare brand COSRX, which I love. Love, have used a lot of their products over the years. It's the Good Morning Low pH Cleanser. And I just repurchased it for the second time. So it's my third tube. So I was like, you know what? This is a true recommendation for me. It's a non-stripping, like pH balancing daily facial cleanser. You can use it morning and night. I have three different cleansers depending on when I'm using them, if I'm wearing makeup, if in the shower, or if I'm at the, you know, like whatever. And this one is just like a gold standard, reliable, your skin's going to be good. You're not going to feel squeaky. I don't use it around my eyes, so I don't know how it goes with like removing makeup, but I really love it. And there's a new-ish, it's maybe been there a year or so, Korean beauty and skincare place on Elizabeth Street in Melbourne called Kim Bao. It's just near the corner of, it's near where like Schnitz used to be on the side of the road where like the Lincraft is near Bourke Street. But this COSRX cleanser is like available a million places. Like Adore Beauty has it. SoCo Glam has it if you're in the States. Very widely available. Very good.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah. Very cheap too.
Love that. My last one is my new autumn playlist called Autumn Also. It's the third in a series. Can you guess how many there are going to be? It's a playlist I put together for our screening event last week that was playing in the lobby at Thornbury Picture House.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it's got some cute little autumnal tunes. It's on Spotify. And if you're in the other side of the world, there is a spring playlist that you can listen to. So I've got everybody covered.
Perfect. My last one is also a little freebie. It's a reminder to get your flu vaccine. And if it's been a while, a COVID booster shot.
Bill, I got both today.
Slay, I got both of mine last week. do you have two little band-aids on your arm somewhere?
Oh, yeah. It's a real puffy little guy under here.
My arm stopped hurting now, so don't worry. It won't hurt for very long.
Yeah, mine's fine.
Is it?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, mine hurt for a few days.
I mean, I'm like, I got it 3 hours ago. I'm fresh.
Yeah, okay.
So who knows what can happen tonight.
Oh my God, you're so immune right now.
I'm not going into any bodybuilding. Apparently it takes 2 weeks. So if you're planning on getting one before you go overseas, which was why I was getting one.
Yeah.
You're at full immunity at the 2 week point is what the doctor told me today. Got it.
I should have planned ahead because, yeah, the bodybuilding center vibe was not a very vaxxed vibe. If you,
oh, I'm picking up what you are putting down.
Anyway, there's a lot of supplements coursing through their veins. I doubt very many vaccines. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. We'll be back next week with more. I don't know why in my head I was like, will we? Yeah, we will.
Yeah, we will. Oh my God, is that our new tagline?
I was trying to picture our rundown of the next few weeks and I was like, what are we doing next week again? I remember now.
It's like, you know how people have taglines like stay with us, like This American Life, and then what's the Karina Longworth's? Join us, won't you?
Join us, won't you? Yeah.
We need one of those.
We do.
We'll be back with more stuff next week.
Question mark. If you haven't left us a review ever, now's a great time. We like reading them. It's our favorite thing to text each other screenshots of. And we're at See Also Podcast on Instagram if you're not following us yet. And don't forget, over on Patreon, for your monthly membership fee, you get ad-free episodes, etc. The last few episodes we have been uploading a bit longer version, extended cuts for the paid subscribers. So if you want a little more juice every now and then, that's a great place to go.
Yeah, and there will be an episode coming up soon that is Patreon only.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Well, Jinx is in Khan. Ever heard of it?
Yeah, I have.
It's gone behind the paywall, baby.
Mais oui.
I wonder who you're going to see this year.
Oh, I don't know.
There's one place we're going to find out.
See also.
That's a teaser.
Patreon.com/see also. Follow us on Instagram at See Also Podcast. And a big thank you, as ever, to Samuel Hodge for the imagery and Harvey Sutherland for the theme music. Bye bye.
See ya.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.